So 1 Corinthians 16. Now we've just come through 1 Corinthians 15 where it talked about, the bodily resurrection, Paul dealing with that. And then we have this phrase in the first verse of chapter 16. He says, now concerning the collection. Now, the latter part of 1 Corinthians 7 on, what is he dealing with? Letters they wrote to him. Things that they had written to him, now he's going to address them. So we're going to look at chapter 16 specifically. We're going to look at this collection. It says chapter 16, verse 1. Let me do this. So in chapter 16, verse 1 of 1 Corinthians, talking about the collection, he says, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. Now, before we go much further, I wanted to first kind of set the stage for this collection. We see this collection being discussed both in 1 and 2 Corinthians, and we see it discussed in Romans chapter 15. So, in the in this first verse, it says, now concerning the collection for the saints. Now, before we go too much further, I wanted to discuss for a second, who are the saints? So my question to you, who are the saints that they're talking about? Christians. Okay, but how would you show that, Alex? Well, so he is writing to the church in Corinth, okay? He's responding to what they wrote to him. But what, I mean, they could be just helping people who are in the community. But you can say no all you want, but you got to give me a reason as to why you can say that. Okay, there we go. Okay, and that's, thank you, ma'am. The idea here is that, and we're gonna talk about this for a few minutes this morning, is because we want to understand who this collection is for, because it also gives us the authority to take up a collection for those as well. Okay, so we can see here something that the Corinthian brethren are doing, something that we can do also. Specifically, we know that there are others who are religiously minded, who are, would consider themselves Christians, of an institutional congregation who would tell you that you can, these saints are not Christians, these saints are orphans, and these saints are people in the community. We want to know who they're talking about, who Paul is talking about. And so just from our perspective, we're not going to go all out. I've already been told I can't talk about institutionalism and all this other stuff. I can't deal with all the other stuff, but I want to deal with what our context is dealing with. So we see this collection talked about in three letters. So we're going to look first at, we've looked at 1 Corinthians 16:1. Look over at 2 Corinthians 8 for a second. We'll just hit each of these verses real quick as to who it's talking about and glean from it what we can. All right, so we want to understand who the saints are, so we use what two rules? Context and harmony. I don't think y'all have heard that before, right? All right, context and harmony. So we're going to go to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Paul, again, writing to the Corinthian brethren, dealing with this again. Verse 4, he says about the Macedonian brethren, it says, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. Okay, so it specifies the saints again here. Look over at chapter 9, verse 1 of 2 Corinthians. Chapter 9, verse 1, it says, for it's superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints. Again, saints again. Look over at verse 12. It says, for the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God. Now, back in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 3, Paul writing to the brethren says, when I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. So we see in 2 Corinthians for the saints. We see in 1 Corinthians 16:1 it's for the saints. 16:3 specifies it's for them in Jerusalem. But now let's look over at Romans 15. Romans 15 helps us to narrow down who specifically are we talking about. So Paul writing to the Roman brethren in Romans chapter 15. I'm going to start in verse 24. He says, whenever I go to Spain, for I hope to see you in passing and to be helped on my way there by you, when I have first enjoyed your company for a while. But now, verse 25, I am going to Jerusalem serving the saints, for Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. You skip down to verse 31. It says that I may be rescued from those who are disobedient in Judah, and that my service for Jerusalem may prove acceptable to the saints. So now we're talking about it's specifically for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. Now, I'm just going to make this statement. If you've got a question about it, then you can ask me. But it's not about location. It's about people. So if we, for one of our purposes, it's the poor saints in Jerusalem, that's who this is for. So it's not so specific as to we have to support only the poor saints in Jerusalem. We're dealing with, that was just the location that the poor saints were in. We're dealing with the people. So it says the contribution for the poor among the saints. Now we can see a couple other things too. Look at verse 27. Verse 27 of Romans 15 says, yes, they were pleased to do so, and they were indebted to them, for if the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual things, they are indebted to minister to them also in material things. So now we've specified it's saints. Who are the saints? Well, he's specifically talking about the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. Okay, but again, who are saints? We see in verse 27 that they sustain some type of relationship to one another spiritually. All right, so do you sustain a spiritual relationship to a member of the community? Not that I know of. They're just a neighbor to me. If it's somebody who is a part of another local work, then yes, you would sustain a spiritual relationship to them. But right here we see that they have shared in their spiritual things, and they are indebted to minister to them also in material things. Look over at 2 Corinthians chapter 9. I'm in 1 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Again, we're going to see, we're going to add to this, give more supporting evidence. So verse 12 of 2 Corinthians 9, for the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but is also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ. Now, I'm not saying somebody in the community wouldn't do that. But this seems oddly specific, don't you think, that they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ. All right. Again, it goes on for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all, while they also, by prayer on your behalf, yearn for you because of the surpassing grace of God in you. Again, this idea of supporting evidence for a spiritual relationship. So I just wanted to point that out for a second. This idea of it's not just somebody who's in need. Somebody we sustain a spiritual relationship to. Now, does anybody have a question about that? Or how I've come to that conclusion? Okay. Now, here's another question. Who's needy? Right? I needy food sometimes. Okay. That doesn't mean I can't go provide for myself. Okay. So what do we mean by needy saints? Or the poor among the saints? Look over at Acts chapter 4 for a second. I bring this up, too, because we're not a socialist congregation. We're just redistributing wealth. Those who are more well off in this congregation, we're going to give to those who are less well off. No, that's not what we're doing. There's a concept here of need that we're talking about. So you see in Acts chapter 4, this is in Jerusalem. We see that verse 34, it says, there was not a needy person among them, for all who were owners of land and houses would sell them and bring the proceeds of the sale and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would be distributed to each person as any had need. We see here that it talks about needy saints. Also in Acts 6:1, we don't turn over there, but Acts 6:1, what is Paul dealing with there? I mean, not Paul. What is Luke writing? What are the apostles dealing with in Acts 6:1? The widows. Okay, which widows specifically? Hellenistic widows, widows in need. Does that mean that the local work should provide for widows? If you've got a widow, what's a widow in need? How can we know that? Okay. No family, no children, no one to help take care of her. Look over at 1 Timothy 5. That's what Don's referencing. 1 Timothy 5. First Timothy 5, verse 16. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them, and the church must not be burdened, so that it may assist those who are widows indeed. So it's not just needy widows, but it's the needy widows who don't have anyone else. Because these widows, if they have family, aren't to be a burden to the church. To kind of help understand this too, let's go to 2 Thessalonians for a second. Needy is relative. I understand that. And so where we've looked at people who are in need, we're going to help define maybe what our responsibility is so that we can know if the congregation should help support us. Look over at 2 Thessalonians 3, starting in verse 6. It says, now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from every brother who leads an unruly life and not according to the tradition which you have received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with labor and hardship, we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. Not because we did not have the right to do this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you so that you would follow our example. Verse 10, for even when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. Now, dealing with this idea of if you're needy because you're not willing to work, well, that's your responsibility. He goes on to say here, verse 11, for we hear that some among you are leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies. Now such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to work in quiet fashion and eat their own bread. As for you, brethren, do not grow weary of doing good. If anyone does not obey our instruction in this letter, take special note of that and do not associate with him so that he will be put to shame. It's not our responsibility here as a local work to provide for somebody in this congregation who is able to go and work. Now, I'm not talking about extenuating circumstances. We'll get into that in just a sec. But if we have somebody at this local work who is capable of getting out and working, and they aren't, and they just want to ride the coattails of the congregation and the contribution that's given, then what are we supposed to do? We're not to associate with them so that they will be put to shame. Now, I know that there have been people, not only of this congregation, but others who need assistance. Okay, there's not a problem with that. That is what a part of our contribution is for, to help those who are in need, who are working and who cannot provide for themselves. But there are so many in our society today, and this is prevalent. We've talked about this over the Thanksgiving holiday, where there are people begging out on the corner because they're just too lazy to go get a job, because they can make more money begging on the corner than they can by working for themselves. There are so many people who are on SNAP and other types of assistance because they're too lazy to go get a job. There's nothing wrong with SNAP, which is, you know, the government assistance that is offered for those people who are making less than minimum wage or who can't provide for themselves. But when all you want to do is sit there and ride the government and the money that the government will give you because you're too lazy to get a job, when you're willing to have kid after kid after kid so the government will support you, not because you want kids, but because the government will give you money, that's a problem. That being said, we as a congregation, there wasn't SNAP back then. If we had a needy saint amongst us who couldn't be making it, it's not necessarily for the government to provide for them. We have a responsibility, and we could. If we wanted to, if we had somebody of this congregation who didn't make enough to provide for themselves, we could help out with assistance in that way. They're a needy saint. Government gives you support. Well, then that may allow for us to use that money for evangelism or to help other people. There are times where people need assistance. I think about my parents. Back in 2008, Ike hit the Gulf Coast, and they were without power for, I think, 6 weeks, was that right? 6 weeks, I think so. No power. My parents were photographers at the time. You know what was high up on everybody's priority list? Wasn't photography. So for 6 weeks, not only did they not have power, they didn't have a source of income. There was FEMA, but FEMA wasn't outside of not being overly organized at times. They're not going to provide you enough that it's going to pay your bills for 6 weeks. Think about that. That's a mortgage. That's the bills that you owe already. You know, just trying to make everyday life to go get your food or they weren't paying electricity, but water, anything else like that. And so they went to the elders of the congregation and asked for assistance. Were they in need? Yes, they were. And so the congregation gave and assisted, just like we have when there have been flooding in other locations. When there is a need, the congregation can step in. But it's, one, based on the fact that we sustain a spiritual relationship to those people, whether it be here or in other locations. Two, it's going to be based on the fact that they are striving to work in such a way to support themselves. People are going to struggle. Sometimes people don't necessarily, you know, have a way with or a mind for money. You know, that's not for us to decide. Sometimes people just don't know how to budget. Sometimes people just aren't really smart with how they use their money. That happens. Are we to judge that? No. Should we try to talk to them? Yes. But if we have brethren who are in need, that's what we're to use this money for. It's not to go support an orphan's home and to go provide for the homeless shelter. That's not what this is talking about. Any questions, comments on that? All right. So back to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Now that we've talked about who this is for, specifically, we go on to verse 2. I'm going to read 2 through 4. Paul writing to them, and he says, "As I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also." So we see here's apostolic authority to do such a thing. He's directing just as he did in all the other churches, just as he did in Galatia. He's telling them. He says, "On the first day of each week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collection be made when I come. When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And if it is fitting for me to go also, they will go with me." So specifically in 2 through 4 or 1 through 4, what issue did Paul specifically address relative to the collection? Every week. So it seems to me, you look at the beginning of verse 2 and the end of verse 2, it says, "On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside." At the very end, "so that no collection be made when I come." Now you couple that with 2 Corinthians. Look over at 2 Corinthians for a second. We see here that this is something that they had already discussed doing, providing for the needy, the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in verse 2, it says, "For I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the Macedonians, namely that Achaia," that is, the Corinthians, "has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them." Prepared in what sense? Well, let's see. "But I have sent the brethren in order that our boasting about you may not be made empty in this case, so that, as I was saying, you may be prepared." They were ready to give, but they needed to be setting aside, being willing to do a thing and then doing the thing are two different things. It says verse 4, "Otherwise, if any Macedonian come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, will be put to shame by this confidence. So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness." So here we're seeing that Paul is writing to them. They wrote to him about this collection. He's saying, "You need to be laying aside on the first day of each week." We see here they've promised this bountiful gift, but we also see that this gift can be affected by covetousness. You know, that's what Paul's writing in 2 Corinthians 9:5. You know, "Go ahead and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gifts so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness." Is it easier to lay aside $100 a week for 10 weeks and then you're able to provide this gift to someone of $1,000? Or is it easier to just write that check for $1,000? And would that really affect you in your mind or in your heart? I mean, that could be a problem. You know, you start to give more money. Well, maybe I don't need to give that much. Maybe I need it. That's a lot of money. They had said and committed to giving a bountiful gift. He doesn't want, when the time comes, for them to have this big collection and it to be affected by covetousness. So let's be prepared. Set aside each week. He goes on to talk about a couple other things here. So what are several lessons we can learn from verse 2? What are some things that he gives direction for? One's already been mentioned. It's how on your sheet it says periodic. You know, the idea of appearing or occurring at intervals. So it's supposed to be done every so often. So that was what? Well, no. So let's deal with just the time frame. So when was it supposed to be? First day of every. Okay. So why then? Why the first day of every week? Because that was when they were already assembling. That seems to me that that's the case. We've talked about the Lord's Supper. We've talked about why we partake of the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. We assemble to encourage and edify one another, to worship and study together. So this would be a convenient time to do it on the first day of the week as well. Okay. What else? I'll run down this list we've got. So it says personal under point 4 on our lesson. So what is it, what would you associate that in the text?
Each one.
Each one. Okay, each one of you. So it's not a business that I own, but it's each one of you is to do it. It's not just a few of us. So does that mean that I need to give and Melissa needs to give separate from me and then Craig needs to give and Jamie needs to give separate from her and then Michael needs to give and Amy needs to give separate from her? Because it says each one?
No, each
one. Craig?
One person I think, it's going to be each group of families or whatever. You stated in the beginning, Keith, that there was a particular collection in mind here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that Paul didn't say, as I directed it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things he would say.
So here specifically to Craig's point, and I'll point something else out too. You, like you said, he didn't mention to all the churches, not directed in all churches, it was the churches in Galatia. I mean, the way I read it, when it talks about Achaia, when it talks about Macedonia, when it talks about Galatia, they wanted to have this fellowship with those in Jerusalem. So he's not going to churches and say, you need to give. It's because they wanted to, born out of the love that they have, but born out of the spiritual relationship they have. Now, we have opportunity to give. That's what we're authorized to do. We're authorized to give on the first day of the week to provide for a lot of different things. Here specifically, it's for the collection for the needy in Jerusalem. We do it every week because we have needs otherwhere, to support our local work here, to support the preaching and teaching of those abroad, to provide for needy saints, just stuff like that. Here specifically, we're dealing with, it was to be done on a regular basis, and we take that pattern because we have continual need to provide for ourselves. If we didn't have a continual need, do we continue to give? We do see that there was a pattern under the old law that they were to give back to God, and we have opportunities. So, but specifically here, we're going to deal with the idea that, one, you give on the first day of the week, and we'll get to a second, the idea as he may prosper. So the idea of you may not give every week because there's a condition to be met as well. But specifically, I want to get with this idea of let each one of you, because something came to mind, if you take this literal, that it may mean that right now Melissa and I aren't doing what the Bible teaches, because she doesn't give separate from me. We give together. But it says, let each one of you. So how do you reconcile that? Craig? Let's flip over to Acts 5 for a sec, because that's exactly where I was going, Craig. That's good. If we want to better understand this, we can look at this this text of Acts chapter 5. So look at another text to help us clarify what's going on, maybe in chapter 16. So you have Acts chapter 5. This is the story of Ananias and Sapphira. And it says, chapter 5, verse 1, but a man named Ananias and his wife Sapphira sold a piece of property. It says he and his wife sold a piece of property. And kept back some of the price for himself, with his wife's full knowledge. So then you get to verse 3, and Peter says to Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back some of the price of the land? It goes on to verse 9, and he says, then Peter says to Sapphira, why is it that you have agreed together to put the Spirit of the Lord to the test? It was theirs. They gave. But in 1 Corinthians it says, let each one of you. Now, I'm not going to be able to articulate this very well, so I'll say it the way I understand, and maybe it can be helped to clarify. But we know we talk about specifics don't exclude. So it says, let each one of you. Now, what I mean by that is, if it says each one of you, does that mean that Melissa and I can't give together? No. I mean, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of, let each one of you does not exclude couples with collective funds giving as one. For clarification, we don't have to contribute separately based on what we see here in Acts chapter 5. So I'm not sure if that's the figure of speech that you'd use, synecdoche, part for the whole. But, you know, each one of you as a household. I'm not the expert on figures of speech, that's why I looked over at Graham. But I think it's clear to understand that when it says, let each one of you, that we can give together. Okay, now here's something else. Does Melissa have a job? Be careful how you answer. What do you mean? Words or vehicles? We're gonna hit all the things today. But words or vehicles? What do you mean by job? Does she go out into the secular world and provide for our family? No. Support me in providing for our family monetarily. I mean, she does teach pianos. She's not sitting over there. She's sitting back there. I'm sitting here. Gesturing at Mark. But no. He definitely doesn't support my household. But no, she has a job. She takes care of the household. She manages our household while I'm out working. She takes care of our kids. Specifically, not only does she take care of our household, take care of our kids, but she's teaching our kids at the house. She has her own role and responsibility. The money that I make, we collectively make, because I can't do what I do without her. It's our money. It's not mine. It's ours. And so we give as one. And so I hope that I've made that a little more clear, that let each one of you, I wouldn't want you to think, well, I'm doing something wrong. Yes, Craig.
One other point, since you're there in chapter 5, back up in chapter 4, verse 34, an example of yours, there was a man named Ananias, and his wife Sapphira, for all who were possessors of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds to the things being sold. I don't think that Luke meant that every single Christian had to sell their house to help the needy. Christians in the New Testament that we see still have their houses. So, you know, either
Possible. No.
Obviously, they had that spirit to give up their own land and their own houses, and the Holy Spirit through Peter said, "You could have got back some of that property."
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and we see that in this is where context and harmony go really well hand in hand together. Look over at 2 Corinthians 9. We were there just a second ago. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7. It says, "Let each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." They weren't being compelled to give away all their stuff in Acts chapter 4. They did it because of their heart, because of what they wanted to do. Okay, that's not, and so I agree with Craig. He's not compelling us to go and sell our houses. We'd all be homeless, and we would need somebody to support us. That's not the idea here. You give as you prosper, and we're getting to that too in 1 Corinthians 6. We give as we purpose. Here, we're talking about they had purpose to want to give. Now, we just need to make sure you do it, because I don't want to be embarrassed for your sake. I don't want to be embarrassed because I boasted in you. That's what Paul's talking about. So we go on and we see that it's every first day of the week. It's each one of you to put inside a save as he may prosper. That doesn't mean as I profit. So once I get done doing my bills, whatever I got left over, I can give to God. That it's as I prosper. So as I work and I make money, I should give from that sum, not from the leftover bit. Okay, so I need to decide what I'm going to give based on what I make. And we can go into talking about before taxes, after taxes, because you know what? I made this money, and then I had to pay bills. These taxes are bills. This insurance is bills. So it's not just what's even in my check. It could be what I make gross total. Because we all know, that number on the top line is different than the bottom line on the tax form. But I still made this up here. I just paid bills. Maybe that came just straight out of my check versus what came into my pocket, and then I paid out. So we have that responsibility as well. So as he may prosper isn't what I profited, what I had left over after everything else, but it is as I've made money. So if you haven't made money, have you prospered? Doesn't mean you can't give, but if you wish to give, you can. But in a situation where, you know, there is going to be a collection, if you haven't prospered, do you give? And you're not compelled to. Yes, ma'am.
Also on.
Yeah, so it's an intention. I agree with you. It's an intentional thing. So you put it inside to save. Does that mean that if you miss a week that you just don't give that? No, that's what you'd purpose to give. You just may have been out of town. So you've set it aside. So you give that amount along with the amount that you'd purposed from the week before. So. I think it's, I'm going to speak to my, what I think, it's.
Put aside and say, when you look it up, that the phrase is talking, he's avoiding, when he arrives, the money's not ready.
Yes.
So he's talking about the church making a collection. It's not you putting the money in your drawer.
Oh, I don't think that's what she's saying either. That's not what she's saying.
The idea that you, on the first of the week, you come together, y'all have this collection, and it'll be ready when I get there.
I'll clarify maybe for Dawn if she wants to speak up. So this isn't a, I'm going to set aside my sock drawer so that I have my money saved for when in this situation when Paul comes. This is a, we're going to purpose in our hearts what we're going to give, and we give it on the first day of the week so that it's ready for when it needs to be used. In our case, when the bills that come due or something like that. In their case, it was ready and amongst that local work, so when Paul came, he gave it. So it's not like, okay, well, now we've all got our own separate collections. We're going to collect it together and then give it to Paul. I think what Don's talking about is more about purposing. So it's not a matter of, I just save it in my sock drawer. It's a matter of, I purpose to give X amount of dollars each week. If I miss a week, I've still purposed to give that money. I wasn't available to give it, so I'm going to give that plus what I'm going to give the following week at the same time. So it's not a matter of just saving it in my sock drawer. It's a matter of when I didn't have opportunity to give because I wasn't at my local work, I provide for it the next Sunday, if that makes sense. I understand. That's not what she's saying. It's what she's... So if I purpose to give money and I'm not in town, then I don't give it.
But on the first day of the week, as you put aside and say, it's not talking about you purposing on Thursday as to how much to give.
Okay, you're talking about you're talking about the put aside and save as a physical. It's a physical action. It's a physical action versus she's talking about purposing. And that's a, and so we'll differentiate that. Does that make sense? So, because that, I noticed that as well, where you don't want to have a situation where I'm conveying to you that you think you can just save on your own and then provide when the time comes. We have a responsibility to put aside and save on the first of the week. The actual physical giving is what he's talking about to them. But we also have a responsibility to purpose how much we're going to give. And so in our heart, if we're going to purpose to give X amount of dollars and we're not able to that week, then we can give it the next week. So there's a physical collection that's being talked about. Put aside and save on the first day of every week. But you're also just a purpose in your heart. And you have opportunity to do that on the first day of the week. And so if you purpose to give and you weren't able to give that week, then you can give the next Sunday. Now, I'll leave it for there. If there's more questions or comments on that, we'll talk about it later. Okay. And so, yes, sir. Yes, sir. No. Yes.
So if a young person in your home who's not married has an income but they're a Christian, it's still a purpose in their heart. It's not daddy tells you it's our family contribution here, give me $10.
Yes. I agree. I've only got 45 minutes, so, you know. we can get into the idea of it's not my money, it's our money. So Melissa and I should decide what we purpose. But if Aurora is giving and she's got her own set of income, it's not for me to tell her what to give. It's for her to decide. And so y'all seen this the entire time. I don't have enough time to cover all this. And I try to, and I don't want to give off the impression of certain things. So if there are more questions on this, just hitting some of the things that struck me as we're going through. Lastly, we'll hit here the idea of provident and anticipation or making ready of future wants or emergencies. You know, what was the point of this? To what end are we doing this collection? So that, you know, each and every first day of the week, so that there won't be a need for a collection when Paul comes. It's ready for those, for the gift that you said you were going to give. Also, let's see here. Oh, it's not in the notes here, but propitious is another P word for this, and it seems all P words. But the idea of you know, favorably inclined or disposed or gracious, this idea of what are the terms of this? We're providing for the needy saints, but what are the terms for this? It's a gift. It's a gift given graciously. You know, this is also the concept too. This isn't I'm loaning you money. This is providing for a need as a gift because of the relationship we sustain or the relationship that they sustain. How were the funds delivered? By a messenger. So we see here in verse 3 that when I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. Again, local autonomy. It's not for us to kick up to another congregation and then they're going to decide, they're going to pull a bunch of funds together and decide how it's going to get sent. We have our local, we have local autonomy. Okay, the sponsoring church idea is, well, we're too small, we're going to kick up to here and they're going to decide what to do with it. Here is just a matter of how we are to provide for over there. We can use agencies. So we have bad messengers. So we may pick a messenger of our local work or somebody else, but we direct how those funds are going to be used. So we can send the money via agency. They had local autonomy. They chose how the money was going to be sent. Nobody else was telling them how to. Well, we got 4 minutes, 3 minutes. All right. Moving on. So we're towards the end of this letter. We see in verses 5 through 10, and then you can hit 19 also. Again, this we talked about this at the beginning of our class back in September. The idea of location, when Paul wrote this and what his plans were. So you can see in 16:8 that he was in Ephesus when he wrote this. And here you can really pin down when this letter was written. So you see in verse 5 that after I go through Macedonia, I am going through Macedonia. He's in Ephesus. He talks about where he's going to go. You can look at this and really kind of have an idea of where it sits into Acts. So you see that he's in Ephesus in Acts chapter 19. You see that he writes about wanting to go to Macedonia and Achaia in Acts chapter 19. And then Acts chapter 20, he does go to Achaia. Now, we know that Paul's plans changed. We know that he was in Ephesus, that there was an open door for him there, but he had adversaries. We know that Paul's intention was to go to Corinth. He changed his plans and went to Macedonia instead because of this letter that he's having to write to them. He was sorrowful, and so we see that in 2 Corinthians 1. You see it 1, 2, and 7. The idea that he was made sorrowful because of this. He didn't want to come to him in sorrow. But we can use this to see how, use this text here in 1 Corinthians 16 to see where this letter fits in and how everything meshes together. I guess the idea would be you've got two different writers. You've got Luke and you've got Paul writing. And yet these mesh together really well. Okay, Paul giving details that Luke had mentioned over there. The idea that you had different writers writing the same thing, historically accurate, pinpointing times and dates, understanding when this was written, that sort of stuff. You can also see in verse 6, it says, perhaps I will stay with you, even spend the winter with you. You see that in Acts 22 and 3, that he stayed with them for 3 months. He stayed with them in the winter months. So that's just an idea of being able to fit 1 Corinthians into the book of Acts. It's historical stuff. It's not overly important for us to cover here. Verse 13, I want to hit this real quick before class ends. Verse 13, Paul writing to the brethren here, he tells them, says, be on alert, stand firm in faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. Here's his admonition to them. Be on alert. Why? Well, because they've got things going on in and around them. They've got people who are infiltrating their congregation. They've got this idolatry and morality going on around them. Be on alert for what's being taught. We've talked about this, the wisdom of men versus the power of God. Stand firm in faith. We talked about this in 1 Corinthians 15. He talks about it in 1 Corinthians 1. The idea that you have this gospel that's been preached to you, that's been confirmed to you. Stand firm in what has been taught to you. Act like men. If we had time, we could look at the fact that this phrase, when you look at it in the Septuagint, is also used. This word is used back in Joshua. Idea of being strong and courageous, which you see again right here at the end of verse 13. Be strong. Act like men. Stand firm in your faith. Be strong and courageous in God. And then let all that you do be done in love. We know that this was a problem amongst them. We know that there were factions, there were issues, there were problems. We talked about 1 Corinthians 13, that they had these spiritual gifts, but love is going to be the thing that is going to prevail. It's going to be the one that is going to, the most special gift, the most important gift. Let all things be done with love. If things aren't done with love, then you're nothing, is what he says in 1 Corinthians 13. So he goes on and he gives his final admonitions, and he says in verse 22, if anyone does not love the Lord, he is to be accursed. Okay, it says Maranatha. My footnote for that says, O our Lord, come. That's the reference for that. But if anyone does not love the Lord, he is to be accursed. His final remembrance to them is, If he doesn't, if they don't love the Lord, let him be accursed. Get him away from me. We talked about that as well. So, thanks, Craig, for the extra couple minutes. I appreciate y'all's attention. We'll review on Wednesday. Thank you.